Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thanks for showing up. It's early Sunday morning. I've woken up less than 30 minutes ago, and tragically, I meant to go to the grocery store last night. But I got caught up working on a science project with a friend, which went exceptionally well. And I completely forgot all of my duties and things that I was supposed to do yesterday. So I woke up getting ready to record this, and I need a little bit of pep in my step. And I've gotten used to drinking caffeinated beverages in the morning. I don't know about you. And it's funny because, like, I don't even need caffeine. I have no necessity for a stimulant. Like, I know I just made a joke about needing a pep in my step, but I don't. But the thought of trying to do something without my structured habits necessity, which in this case is caffeine, it was just incredibly difficult to think about. I work in a kitchen most of the time, and so usually coffee is just available. It's like right there, especially if you work at a diner joint. So I quickly drove over to the store and I grabbed myself a cup of coffee so I could feel comfortable to do this, and now we're here. But how are you? Good morning. How's your week been? Are you actively working on your own personal pursuits? Because that's the most important. Self-work is the way to affect our microcosmical connective groups that we find ourselves in. So all of our closest others around us are going to get that benefit, which is part of what I want to talk about tonight. But I guess to preface this conversation, have you tried to be altruistic this week? Altruism being this sort of charity, but charity has kind of like a negative connotation to it, really, doesn't it? And we're not just trying to give out of pity. We're trying to give out of our own personal self-work, right? So my act of giving is so that I can put more memories into my head, maybe, of just past times that I've given, which makes it easier because then I carve a better path in my path of habits in my brain, and it's always just going to become easier for me to do that, right? Or it is some way in order to, if we approach it as a metaphor like exercise, whereas compassion is a bone or a muscle and it needs some sort of conditioning in order to get it into its process, and then we have to practice. I was once told by somebody who to me seemed like they were in a master status. In reality, they were just a stranger, you know. Not quite a stranger, more of an acquaintance, if anything. But it wasn't somebody I knew very well. But they looked at me, and they told me, fake it till you make it. And I've had other people who weren't acquaintances, such as my family members, and like my dad used to tell me the same thing. But when this lady happened to tell me this sentence, fake it till you make it, and that instance, it hit differently. It tasted differently. It had a different texture that day, you know? And it's this idea of, even if we don't feel good, we don't feel great, and we don't want to step out of our little world of our own pity and our own self-constricted doom and whatever we're telling ourselves within that perception, because we are running our perceptions of how we see our world. And a very efficient way to break out of that one-sided viewing is to reach out into another's viewpoint, which requires some feat of giving or reaching. We have to reach out. We have to try. We have to have some sort of basis of wanting to love. But not to love in the classical romantic sense where we have conditioned needs and somebody is now filling a necessity for us where they fill some sort of need where we use another person in that facet. I don't like to think of that kind of love as my kind of love. I've spent a lot of time practicing my form of unconditional love that I see as a field, as a basis and foundation for my humanity that is the base of where I grow, if that makes any sense. I feel that love can be given to anybody, to a stranger. It's an attention, it's an attitude, it's a way we approach the other, with the other being anything that is outside of who we are or who we decide we are within this I, this me, this being, this seat that we're in that we conduct our lives from. Everything that's outside of that requires some sort of relationship. And that can be in a very platonic sense, really. But I feel that anybody has access to this love, you know, and that's one of the feet I stand on in this show. That's one of my primary influences and purposes here. The other being, I want to get people to want to creatively construct their own lives with an artistic passion. Artism, artists, this art that is everywhere. Art exists in the spoken language. Art exists on paper. Art exists in all of the different video media forms. Art exists in performance and how somebody chooses to act in a certain tight moment of frame. But a long form of art, such as our lives, which has this innumerable choices that are consistently laid upon us, in this row, like breadcrumbs through this wicked forest that is laid out by some mysterious being inside of who we are. And all these breadcrumbs lead towards action, they lead towards karma, they lead towards consequence, but they also lead towards our own creation. We become who we are through doing it, through being. That is a creative act, and I see that as the ultimate art. And I want other people to be completely awake to their own impact on their own lives. And I believe, personally, that we can be infectious to one another, that we can be contagious with our behavior and how we choose to treat other people. If we want to be loving unconditionally, other people in circles that we may not ever see, that we might not ever touch, but these people will still feel unconditional love because we showed that person, they're going to go give it to somebody else too. I believe that wholeheartedly. I think that's how social change happens in a grassroots way. And we could do it with creativity and inspiration too. I think we could do it all to one another. So that's what I'm trying to do here. Just to reframe my purpose so that you could be very clear on what the gingerbread man wants to do. I want to know what I want to do. Sometimes I lose that. But so today I want to start out. I've had this tension that I've been trying to handle for a while. And I liked to use words. This is one of my active outlets right here, is speaking. The microphone's a powerful outlet because it gives you an ability to try to speak to a lot of different types of people. And that's potency, and it's also an immense opportunity of something I'm always going to be grateful for and I'll never take lightly. But I also have always liked the pen and paper, and I've tended towards poetry and journaling. I forget to do it, but it's really good for me. I don't know if you've ever tried journaling. There's a lot of different ways to journal, too. You don't just have to journal from an I center. You can talk to yourself. One of my favorite language uses in journaling is using you-centered language. So like if you talk to yourself as a you, like you need to do this, it's almost like you step outside for a second. And the paper acts as a portal that allows for this disattachment to happen. And you can be amazed what happens in the parts of you that you can see when you're not just staring at one corner. So I've been having contemplations, really, about how I wanted to feel about my impact on other people, which is why I started out speaking about altruism. So while bitter, I wrote this and put it on a very public forum. I use social media and Facebook as a wall, and I misused it a lot in the past. And it can be a great way to publicly show yourself. I think that has value in its own right. And so I've done that. And it also lets me have this access to memories, especially because I post all these important poems and stuff there, that throughout the year I can see the things that I wrote several years ago. And that has a tremendous effect on me. It really does. So without any preamble, this is what I wrote about the situation. I'm going to describe it. Here goes. You cannot please everybody, and it is impossible to single-handedly make a person happy. We are not each other's cure. There never was something outside of us that could do such a thing. So why help? Why be loving and have grace? For its own sake, I argue. And that is for a singular purpose, because that is what growth is. That is what maturity is in humanity. My mistake has been in having expectations on how another receives my goodwill, and how twisted a practice that is. What service could that do to anyone? How dare you be miserable? Despite me, how dare you continue to flagellate yourself with your flagellate ego? That's not my place, and never should be. I am here to be loving simply because. To all the strangers and to all those I hold dear, I choose to be loving, for me, and through my own self-work, your benefit. So, this is a concept I know I've spoken about. One of my primary movers in this life, the late Ram Dass, ever present still, always said, the one thing I probably say every episode, the best thing I can do for you is work on me, and the best thing you can do for me is work on you. This inverted golden rule of active, cathartic creation when we are moving towards the future and choosing actions. Whereas the golden rule says treat others as you would like to be treated. So there's this internal frame of how I would like to be treated, and then I project that onto others, right? But here, it's not as grounded. If anything, this idea is levitating above the floor, or it's in suspension, because the strings that are holding the idea up is the profession of what we are becoming. And doing something just for its own sake. Now that's a tricky one. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna and Arjuna sit upon their chariot in between the two packs of angry soldiers about to go to war, when Arjuna is torn in choice to choose what he wants to do in this battle, Krishna looks down to him and he says, every action, karma, bears fruit. The mistake is in our choice to eat the fruit. Every action bears fruit. Do we have to ingest it? Do we have to roll in the fruit of what we did? And this reminds me of a dog finding a pile of shit. One time, when I was little, I had this like white boxer and this big, gigantic boulder that was like 6 feet tall. And on top of the boulder was a dead vulture. And the dog found his fruit. He did his action. He jumped on the boulder. He found and produced this corpse, you know, and then he rolled around in it. And this is what I think we do a lot, is that we do a lot of things, and some things aren't as intentional. And sometimes we have consequences and we make karmic fruit that isn't even quite our own not to get lost in this metaphor, but basically what Krishna is saying is whatever happens, you know, you don't have to roll around in it. You know, you don't have to ingest the fruit. We can do things simply for their own sake. And I would argue again that focusing on the situation in the present is going to be a lot more influential, helpful to ourselves, helpful to our other party, of course. But focusing in the present on what we're doing makes it so much more fulfilling, and I think that we can do it better, at least in my opinion. So, consequences and action and giving and how we feel about it and what it feels like when you give something to somebody and they don't want it. That's something that's always been hard for me to wrestle with, because being a soft, compassionate, emotional man, I've always wanted to have a positive impact on others, and I've always wanted to be helpful. And you can't put your grace on everybody. A lot of people have their own set of rigorous routines that they are involved with in their life. Everyone around you has their own self-concept and their own trials and tribulations and their own misery and their own set of protocols and boxes that they put around themselves. It's not uncommon to encounter someone who has restrictions in how they've chosen to interact with others, that they may be incapable of being able to receive any goodwill from anybody. And this isn't your fault. This is because of past damages. And the act of trying to help this person is still valid, even if they refuse it. That's a hard one to hear. That's a hard one to accept. But what I'm still stuck on is the why. Why are we continuing to do this? Why? Why continue to be loving? Why continue to go do this act? I base mine in spiritualism because I do it because I believe that everybody's part of me. And I look at this sense of wholeness and connectivity in the world, and every single speck of life is my brother, sister, and part of my body. And so what benefits others benefits me. And so I would do it even for somebody who's horrible to me, which I have in the past. I've had somebody who was in some ways evil to me and my family, and I was still able to continuously show this person grace. And it was a powerful move for my insides, because now I know I have that fortitude and that's part of my being. And he never hurt my family, and he'll never hurt me, but I still showed him love and I still showed him grace. You hear that? That gives me a strong sense of purpose, meaning, logarithm, I guess. Not logarithm, that's math. Logotherapy in the Man's Search for Meaning, whatever his name was. So, does that give you a little bit of faith in the act? Because, like, I think what can happen a lot is that we can become disingenuous to our own intentions, and we can lose track of why we're doing it. And this is where I start to take it personal. This is where I become bitter, and I start to become hateful, because the other seems to have just taken my gift and stepped on it, and or maybe just shit on it sometimes. There's whatever figurative language you want to use, but the personal attack judgment call that I create, because this is all a self-concept, this is all a mental fugue of things that I'm making. It's not something that anybody's personally giving to me when I choose to think of this situation this way, because I chose to help. We chose to be loving, you know? That was our first step forward. Other people still might have a lot of things that they're still digging out of. And our helpful act can still grow us, even if they don't receive it. So I brought two very important books that were very dear to me. And I've been working with this guy for several months, and he's somebody that I trust. I thought we were friends. We are friends. Doesn't matter whatever mental machinations are happening outside of me right now. I know I still love this person. But he's been in a difficult stretch in his life and has particular living situations, which I've always found people who are struggling with their own insecurity in the very structural sense of that word. Insecure starts with having a home and food. You know, you can have all the money in the world and not have a home, be stuck in a system of institutions, and this can rob you of your personal being and how you feel about yourself. You know, this can make you very bitter. And so I understand why this person has such a difficult time being right now. It drags from its initial situation, its initial start, and it starts to spread on other people in this form of projections. And while in a point of weakness, I chose not to see this realistically as it was, and I saw it as an attack. And so I brought my two favorite books to try to cheer this person up, because I'm a giver. I bring gifts to people. It's one of my love languages, is I try to give people things. And the most important thing to me is words and books. So if I really want to help somebody, I'm going to give them the most important thing to me, which makes sense to me. But logically, outside of my little world, my little microcosm of thought, this might not translate to another person's needs or wishes. And so he didn't want my books. He was angry. And it might not have even been me that he was directly angry at, but after I began to get emotional and I took it personal, his anger quickly floated and caught onto me like a fly trap. And I am the unwilling, ignorant fly getting stuck in the mire of this depressing episode of pity. It was hard. It's still hard. I don't like when people refuse my gifts. And perhaps that's probably one of the most spiritual practices I could do right now, is practice having people not receive my gifts. If I could have a long run, like just people standing in a line just to refuse gifts from me, that'd be great. in a practical way, you know? But I bring this up because I want to continue showing this person grace. And I need to drop the personal attachments to it. Do you hear that? We attach to certain outcomes. We attach to expectations on how other people should be, which we can't change that. That's not our place. Nothing outside of us can ever change who we are. Fundamentally, we change it. We are influenced by everything outside of us. But it all gets filtered through that duality for now. And that's part of the trip of these heavy circumstances that come. And that's about enough of my bullshit. So I'm going to move on to some words of wisdom from people very important to me, those who are long past. I love dead people, not in their weird, morbid sense, but I really do love the words of the long past primary source material texts. I love religious texts and philosophical texts, so I like to share these at the end of the episodes. Here we go. We'll do a little bit of Nietzsche, some Plato, and a couple other things. Here we go. Nietzsche says, Fine feelings and noble impulses ought, speaking physiologically, to be classified with the narcotics. Their abuse is followed by precisely the same results as the abuse of any other opiate. Weak nerves. He's crotchety and cranky, but it does have a modicum of good practice, I think. We always have to be careful on how intoxicated we get on ourselves. All right. This is from Plato's Republic. I recently just started this. The translator is Benjamin Jowett, who was a British dude from the 1800s. The language is very flowery, but I've always liked the Greeks. These are post-Socratic. Plato could be considered Socratic, but he really was Platonic. He had his own system of thought, which focused on this world of forms, this idea of idealism, which is where ideas of things are more real than the physical nature, because we have this sensory Easter egg hunt where we're constantly collecting information from the outside world, and this computation is what we really touch and we feel, and we never feel the world in itself. And so for Plato, the world of forms is this existential reality that is imminent beyond anything we could ever do. But he also had a lot of thoughts on justice, on happiness, on virtue, which for Plato and Socrates, virtue is wisdom. It's truth, the knowledge that can be appertained through willing sacrifice of our humanity to self-transcend it, really, you know? Anywho's, this is a little slot from him that I enjoyed yesterday. And he's speaking to an older man named Cephalus, and he's asked Cephalus, you know, is it harder to be an old man? Do you ever wish that you could be young again? And Cephalus replies, the truth is, Socrates, that these regrets, and also the complaints about relations, are to be attributed to the same cause, which is not old age, but men's character and temper. For he who is of a calm and content nature will hardly feel the pressure of age. But to him who is of an opposite disposition, youth and age are equally a burden. And that's really how I feel. It's all perspective. It's all how we choose to chunk and how we choose to make a situation. It's how we choose to treat ourselves, and through that, how we choose to treat our world, with the micro going inside the macro, with Indra's net, the metaphorical infinite space of multifaceted gems that are all reflecting each other. So if you were to look into those, that fucked up mirror maze of reflections, how everything inherently has its other inside of it. And that's why I love doing this. That's why I love you. That's why I think you are important. You are an amazing being. I'm so grateful to have this opportunity to sit here with you and to be able to do this. So thank you. I'm going to go grab Odin. We'll see if he has any valuable advice for you. Go be loving to you and go have an impact. You do.
Hello, people. It's Asuka today with the Ginger Man.
Oh.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good.
What were you thinking about?
Well, I was just thinking about, I just saw this on YouTube. It's actually real. Never go to high school in Ohio because clowns been attacking them. Ohio. Clowns, literally.
You know, there's clowns. A chance you might actually be speaking to somebody from Ohio right now. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yeah, no.
What if they're in high school?
Well, people are in Ohio high school. Please do not go to your high school. Just get onto a laptop or something and stay home.
This is a public service announcement from Captain Odin. So, thank you.
Welcome.
Okay. All right, guys. Have a great week.
Ohio people and normal people, bye and have a great week. And have a rest.